Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and our exploration of purposes and preferences. Wondering at our preferences can help uncover the purposes they serve. From there, we get to choose. In this episode, Greg Meyer encourages us to choose the things that leave the door open for others rather than closing it behind us.
About 20 years or so ago, at a time when certain neighborhoods, which they usually are, experience a disproportionate amount of the violence and, you know, crime that goes on. And there was a woman, and she was, you know, elderly. She'd moved here up north from somewhere down south. I don't remember the exact details of that anymore. It was either the Central or the Phillips neighborhood. She moved in the neighborhood, and the people told her, you know, this is kind of a tough neighborhood, but that didn't seem to bother her too much. She did notice that the kind of sporadic violence was keeping people in their homes and they weren't mixing much, you know, and she wasn't used to that. She didn't like that very much. But then it happened to her. Her house got broken into, and of course, all the advice came pouring in. Get better locks. If you're going to live alone, you maybe want to consider a different neighborhood. And her family down south, you know, wanted her to move back home and so on. And she took all that in, but then she did something different. She went and bought a snow cone machine and a big cooler, and she started giving away snow cones, summertime, giving snow cones away to any of the kids whenever they wanted them, pretty much, you know, every day. Adults, too, if they asked. And you can imagine what happened, right? I mean, people started hanging outside more. The kids were playing outside because they were coming and going, getting snow cones, and the crime rate in the neighborhood just plummeted. And it was amazing. It was a huge turnaround for her. Now, that may have been kind of a fairy tale ending, oversimplifying what it takes to, to fight crime and to restore neighborhoods. And it certainly didn't solve all the problems, you know, that the people in that neighborhood were experiencing. But it did happen. And it made a difference. And her story is an open door to what I want to talk with you about today as we continue considering our purposes and our preferences. So, welcome. Thanks for being here. Glad you're with us today. I noticed something just recently. Brené Brown kind of woke me up to it once again in her book, An Atlas of the Heart. She mentioned something that I've heard from a lot of different sources and really is confirmed by my life experience. And that is this, that we human beings will do almost anything to avoid feeling pain. We'll do almost anything to avoid feeling pain. That means most of our preferences, the things that guide what we end up choosing to do or to not do, right? They're far too often not directed by some underlying, you know, aspiration we have, a dream for our world, for our lives, but really, rather than reaching for something, they're driven by something we're avoiding. We're avoiding pain. Pain in the sense of hurt, physical, social, relational injuries that we incur, pain in the sense of dealing with change. Who likes change? After all, change means loss, right? Loss means pain. Change in the sense of confusion. You know, getting stuck in that place where you just don't know what's going on and what you're supposed to do. You're out of control. You lack the certainty. You lack the assurance. You lack the familiarity that you crave. Now, everyone expected that woman that I was telling you about to be driven by fear, and to deal with it all by protecting herself, limiting her exposure to hurt, to pain, to loss, right? To choose to close doors that were threatening her. And make no mistake, she was being threatened. That was not imagined. What was being imagined was that fear was the only response to what she's experiencing. And that by following it, she could somehow address the wounds that she and her neighborhood were experiencing. That's what was being imagined. Of course, she preferred to be safe. I mean, who wouldn't? But she also preferred some other things. She preferred that her neighbors would also be safe, not just her. She preferred that the children could play outside their houses and be safe. And she even preferred that the people who were committing these crimes and this vandalism, that they could be safe from whatever it was that was pulling them in that direction. There was something deeper than fear going on in her, in her drive, something bigger than this, you know, just preference for personal safety, something that really mattered to her. I want to call that thing a purpose, a purpose. And that purpose made her open doors rather than close them. And that silly, audacious risk that she took made all the difference. So we've been talking about preferences and purposes here, and we're going to, for the next couple of weeks, and if you're not familiar with it, if you weren't here last week, go back and listen to the podcast, because I think it'll fill in a lot of details that are helpful to this. But in short, let me give you a really basic, simple descriptions, definitions, please, because you know them already, right? What's a preference? A preference is how you like things to be, right? A preference is how you like to be. And what are purposes? Purposes are what really matters. A purpose is the why behind your want. Now, we all tend to be pretty clear about what we want and about what we like. What we're not so clear about is the why. We're not so clear about the purpose that sits behind our preferences. And when we don't have a solid purpose behind a preference, helping us choose what we want, what we're going to do, then we're living and we're acting out of what I call ungrounded preferences. Ungrounded preferences are a problem. They really are. They lead us places that are disconnected from how the world was made to work and what our lives could be like. Now, one of those ungrounded preferences, and the one I really want to talk about today, is that we human beings tend to share this preference for closing doors. This is my grandson, Gavin. There he goes. He's 3.5, and he is in that stage where he's discovering... Thank you, Gavin. He's in that stage of life where he's just discovering that he can at least partly control his world, his environment, right? And he gets great satisfaction out of doing it. And the thing that he really likes doing right now is closing doors. It's a way of controlling that environment. So he goes around. He might be playing something, and you come in the room and leave the door open. He won't even look at you. He just gets up from what he's doing, goes, shuts the door, and goes back and starts doing it again. Or if he sees you leave the room, and he knows you're probably going to leave the door open, you're going to close the door, right? You know, he's just a great little policeman for all that. Now, Gavin is probably going to grow up and get tired of closing doors all the time, you know? Probably like the rest of us, leave the door open. At least that's a way of controlling his world. He's going to realize that, you know, just actually closing all those physical doors isn't that big of a deal and doesn't give him that much control over his world. But he also is probably going to do something that the rest of us also do, and he's not going to lose the urge to try to keep his world the way he wants it, protecting his preferences, closing the doors to the world. Now, what's going on here? You and I have a preference for closing the door behind us because you and I will do almost anything to avoid pain. At least until we get a big enough purpose that can live within us and kind of lead us and take us in a certain direction. No, what we want is some control. We want to get things figured out. We want things worked out. We want them established. And make no mistake, I understand the urge because life is tough. And until we get a grip on some things, I mean, how do we go on, right? And maybe you've created that little bit of order. You found some status quo, some equilibrium for yourself. And it was hard to get that little bit, right? I mean, you worked hard for it. And so I understand that we need this and we're trying to do it. But there's a problem. Because at some point, we have this tendency to say, enough, all right? I worked hard to get here. I just want to keep it this way. Maybe we like the little worlds that we've created too much because we're tired and because we met her once and it was hard to get where we are and we don't want to give up that ground. We just want to keep it the way it is. We want to close the damn doors. And here's what I know about that. Here's what we all know about that. Life and growth do not happen behind closed doors. Life wants to burst through those doors. Life wants to make snow cones. It wants to explore. It wants to be open and to wonder. It wants to be honest about the imperfections of the world that it has created, not to beat up on it, not to say it's no good or it's not good enough, but just because there could be something better. Let's explore it and let's find it and let's be a part of that. And maybe this is probably the biggest thing about it. It wants what it has found to not only be good for itself or yourself, myself, but for others as well. You know, here's one of the things about purposes and preferences that I think is true. Your preferences have a tendency to be about you. Isn't that true? My preferences tend to be about me, what I want for me. But purposes, especially those big ones, those ones worthy of living for, the ones that spring from the fabric that we all come from and that is deep inside of us, they tend to be about us, don't they? They tend to be about us. And when you are tempted to let that door swing shut, capping off all the influences that are out there and that might try to come in, maybe influences, you know, open doors to your job or your home or your opinions and attitudes, your lifestyle, your values, your religion, whatever. Do you ever stop to wonder why it is that all of a sudden now is the time to shut the door? Why not earlier? Why not at some earlier point in your life when you had, you know, a different equilibrium, a different sweet spot going? Maybe, you know, like when you were really young and you had everything figured out. Why not close it then? Why now? And then why do you get to decide that the door should be shut? Why not your parents? Why didn't your parents, when you were 19, decide, well, you've explored enough career options, you've had enough, you don't need to keep listening to that newer music or have those new friends or go to those new places. Maybe your parents did do that. I don't know. Or what about your partner in life? How come they don't get to decide that when the door gets shut for you? Or why don't our kids get to decide for us? Or your boss at home, you know, we've got this product, we know how to do it. We don't need to think about new marketing stuff. We don't need to think about new innovation. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. Or maybe timely, why not your elected officials? Why don't they get to decide when the doors get shut? I mean, would it be so bad to leave the doors open? Is it so hard to live with open doors? And big question, do you have any idea how hard you are working right now to keep those doors shut in your life? Do you have any idea what it means for you to be protecting the way you know, you understand, you do your job, your home, your opinions, your attitudes, your lifestyles, your values, your religion, so they don't get messed with too much? Here's something else I know. We underestimate it. We underestimate the energy required to maintain control, to keep our status quo, and to be comfortable. And at the same time, we overestimate the energy required to let go. It's kind of like the battle between the known and the unknown, right? I mean, what you know is always seems easier than what you don't know. We never evaluate it very fairly. That's why people stay in abusive relationships. That's why people stick with jobs that don't fit them, that are just sucking the life out of them, because the known just somehow seems to be better than the unknown. It's why people don't jump out of airplanes. I mean, seriously, okay? I mean, think about it. Why is it so hard to jump out of an airplane, right? It's just taking a step, and all you have to do is fall. I mean, you don't have to know anything to fall. Gravity takes care of it for you, right? You know, that's all there is. The problem is the unknown of what's on the other side of that airplane door that makes it so hard to take that step, right? Okay, so you need a parachute. Did I not mention that this metaphor includes a parachute? Okay, all right. You need a parachute. But you've got a parachute already. The parachute in your life is in you, and it's around you. It's in you, and that you've been practicing letting these scary things happen to you all your life, and you've survived it. And it's around you, and that you don't have to do this alone. Now, just Stick with me here for a minute. When you were in utero, you were comfy and cozy. You had good thing going. Great status quo behind that closed door, right? Sure, space was disappearing and you're getting kind of more cramped all along, but it happens so slowly you don't quite notice it. You know, and the trade-off was just like nice subdued lighting. It was a constant warm temperature. It's kind of muffled sounds, familiar sounds around you all the time. I mean, who wants to mess with that, right? But then all of a sudden something changes. And this is tremendous squeezing, and it hurts, and it's uncomfortable. And then, boom, cold, and it's way too bright, and it's the free fall. But there's a parachute, and it catches you. It's a family that takes you in their arms. It's a blanket. You didn't know those existed. There was food. You didn't know anything about food before, and isn't this great? I mean, it's there for you. And as harsh and as scary as it seemed, you did it. You did it. And since then, you have done that over and over again. You've gone to school. You learned an instrument. You learned to play a sport. You experienced new people, new places, maybe changes in your home, changes in your family, all that stuff. You have the skills to go through the door. You have the people. I hope you have the people. And if you don't, you know, they're here, right? We can connect you with the people that you need to do this with. You have dealt with open doors before. You have done it again and again in your life. And yes, it's hard. What blows in through those open doors can be hard to handle. But the energy that you need to stop it, to protect the world that you've had, is so much greater than you realize. And the energy needed to let go, to leave the door open, to let those winds blow is so much less. It's just stepping out of the plane and trusting your parachute. And we don't want to do that. We're scared. We'd prefer to stay in the plane or not even get on the plane, right? Yeah. Now, something else that I've tried to drive home about purposes and preferences, I tried last week and we'll keep doing that, is that this, you know, this isn't my idea. This isn't some sort of novel new idea that just popped up in the world or something. I mean, this is kind of as old as history. It's core to what the Bible was trying to talk about. Jesus, you know, never used the language of purposes and preferences, but he talked about it all the time. Our preference for closing doors was something he was trying to get us to rethink. He wanted us to wonder. He wanted us to imagine the possibilities. He wanted us to look for the better than betterness of having things be different than what we were comfortable with already. So Jesus was consistently telling us that things don't work the way we think they should, and that's okay. That's okay. Those stories I shared last week, and go back and listen to those, they all ended up with our expectations, the way we would like things to be, our preferences, getting turned on their heads. The first being last, and the last being first, right? If you want to be greatest, you need to be the servant of all that kind of stuff. Jesus was assuring the people at his time, and he's assuring us as well, that the world may not work the way we want it to work, but it is how it works. And when, in fact, we get in sync with that, when we align ourselves to that, when we weave ourselves into the way it works, then that upside-down way is actually better. And, in fact, it's not only better, it's the easier lift of our options. So Jesus went around the house opening doors that people had closed. Sorry, Gavin, you're going to have to deal with that. He opened doors to the outcasts, to the tax collectors, to the people that were labeled sinners. He would stop for the crowds because he had compassion. Didn't turn his head and try to sneak by because they were going to interrupt what he was busy doing. You know, he consistently was saying, well, no, bring them here. Or he would stop the entourage and say, what do you want? Or he would say, let them come. For it's people like this that the kingdom of heaven belongs to. Remember this. Melissa mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when she was speaking. Jesus said, come to me if you're worn out and carrying more than you can handle. I will give you rest. Take my yoke. What's that? My way of dealing with the world, right? Take my way of dealing with the world and see how it works. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. Wow. I mean, who isn't looking for that? Who isn't looking for that rest for the soul? My yoke, it's easier. My burden, it's lighter. So let go of the door handle. Just leave it open. Closing doors from the inside to keep them sealed so that the world cannot get you and to preserve what you already have is not only harder, it is a description of how you make a tomb. And we all kind of know Jesus' take on tombs, right? Okay. So now this isn't just about my life and, you know, what I prefer, what I do, or about your life and what you prefer and do. This is foundationally true for fabric as well. And we're trying to make those connections as we talk about purposes and preferences this week, these weeks. Now, when we started this community in 2006, we started with a couple of important core commitments that we have worked on building into the culture as thoroughly as possible, and we try to keep them in front of us because we don't keep that grounding in front of our purposes, right? They become ungrounded ones, and that isn't good. And in every case, you know, these core commitments are really purposes to keep in front of our preferences, both individually and collectively. Now, one of them that I hope sounds kind of familiar to you is this one. Fabric is mostly made up of, who can finish that sentence? Say it out loud. Oh, music to my ears. Fabric is mostly made up of people who aren't here yet. Yeah, what's that all about? It means basically that the door doesn't close after one of us, you or me or anyone else, comes through it. Now, and that sounds like, well, of course, you know, we want that. That's well and fine. But it means that we can't do one of the things that people really prefer, and that is become a group of insiders, the already here, people behind closed doors. It means that while we take care of this community, those of us who gather together, we also stay externally focused. We are here for each other and the person who isn't here yet. And since there's a lot more of them than us, where's our primary focus? Now, this isn't just a generous comment, a generous way of being, oh yeah, you know, we'll also, you know, care about other people. No, it's actually, this is how we become who we can be. I mean, it's integral to caring for ourselves. Many years ago, I was a pastor in a large church that was solid, prosperous, and so on, doing a great job with a lot of things, but it also kind of stuck a little bit. And they were poised for what was their what's next if they were willing to kind of let the door be open, if they were kind of willing and ready to let go of stuff or not. And I remember a leader from the larger church coming and speaking to us. This guy was kind of a wild, prophetic guy, but came deceptively dressed in the suit and tie and stuff, so you didn't know it was coming. And he spoke to this large group of folks from this church who were the people who had built this church to be what they wanted it to be, what it could be. And he spoke for quite a while, but I only remember his first 11 words. And they're all I needed to hear. And his first 11 words were this: I am here today to ask you to give your church away. I am here today, again, as I have for 16 years, asking you to give this church away. What does that mean? It means fabric isn't about you or about me. And this is probably the biggest, most important part. It is premised on the notion that you will never have the church you want by wielding your power, your influence, to make it be the way you want it. But by serving it, serving fabric, so that it can meet the needs of others. You get full by serving yourself and achieving your preferences. You get fulfilled by serving others and seeking your purposes. You'll spend your life trying to figure that one out. You get full by serving yourself, achieving your preferences, but you get fulfilled by serving others and seeking your purposes. You may remember last week we talked about this messy, dynamic reciprocity, about how things flow both directions, not just one direction. This giving your church away isn't a path of self-denial or self-renunciation. It's not just a huge discipline thing that you got to do to be a good person. No, this is a path of discovering what there really is to receive, of bringing others to life so that their gifts can be here and you can get what you need as well. It means not closing the door after you came in. After all, the people who came in before you, they didn't close the door. They left it open for you. And why would one of us be the ones that we were waiting for all along and we could say, okay, now we got it. That's great. Let's just move on from here. Now, after that challenge to my previous congregation, we did decide to give our church away. Yeah, not completely or perfectly, okay? This is a large, staunch, traditional church, after all, and no one does anything completely or perfectly, but yeah, you know, some really good and important moves. And as we did that, we could start seeing things, not that needed to be done differently, but that could be done differently. And that's different. That's different. Not that needed to be, but could be done differently. And stuff started happening. The church, after years of being stalled, you know, at a nice, comfortable size, started seeing an influx of new people, mostly younger people. Now, this is a traditional church, so mostly church college graduates, you know, who had classical music programmed on their car radio and liked choral music. Even then, that was a dying breed. But the Twin Cities is big enough that there were quite a few of those, all right? You know, so that was good. And then one day, not too long after all that, when things really had changed a lot, we had a dinner at the church building, and I was seated at a table with Helga McKinney. Helga was 80-some years old. She'd been coming to that church since she was first married. She'd raised her kids there. She had buried her husband. She had lived her life at this church. And as we're eating and talking and stuff, all of a sudden she turns to me and says, you know, Greg, I used to know everybody at this church. I mean, these are all my friends. We all knew each other. And now I look around and I don't know anybody. They don't know my name and I don't know their names. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, here I'm going to have to, you know, go on the defense and explain why we've done all the changes we have and assure her that she isn't forgotten. But in the middle of my making the speech up in my head, I'm stopped because her hand goes in my hand. And she looks at me. She looks at me with this big smile on her face and says, I love this church. She had given her church away, and she found it. I'm here asking you to give your church away. To not only remember, but to love the fact that most of us aren't here yet. Fabric is mostly made up of people that aren't here yet, and until they are here, something indispensable is missing. And if we close the door behind us, we will discover that we have made a lifeless, airless tomb. But if we leave it open, the wind will blow, and it will make us a bit uncomfortable, and it will make us very, very much alive. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy or without questions. I've had people both within and beyond Fabric, asked me if this makes Fabric a 101 church, a beginner's church, right? You know, you enter here, you get your intro course, and then you graduate to a real church afterwards that goes deeper. Folks, deeper is about relationships. It is not about content. It is always about relationships. Deeper is not about how much you know, it's what you do with what you know. Deeper is not about how well you know the Bible, the number of spiritual practices you've mastered, or how woke you've gotten on social issues. It's about the capacity for love that you've unlocked in your heart. Love even for that person who isn't here yet. Yeah, it means being willing to break open those great bonds you've worked so hard for in your group, to not just welcome someone else, but to actually go and find them because they need what you found, and to bring them into your group and make your group too big so it's not functional anymore, and you've got to divide that group that you love so much into two, because living things divide and become two. They give birth, right? It means putting up with me explaining week after week who Paul is, right? Or why we don't just say God, or why we're using the Bible this time, or why we're not using the Bible, or what a gospel is, or explaining what a parable is, or what a psalm is, and doing that over and over again because you already know it, and why do I have to say it again? No, because they're mostly made up of people who aren't here yet. And there are more of them, so they win the vote. You know, I worry that if we decide it's time to close the doors so that we can huddle as a group and go deeper, that we're really just creating an echo chamber where we can hear ourselves and don't have to deal with the real world. And not only cutting ourselves off from the world, but cutting off ourselves from this God who's like begging us, calling us to weave ourselves into the fabric, not cut ourselves off from it. Maybe, in fact, that's what Jesus was getting at when he said, those who want to preserve their life, preferences, right? Those who want to preserve their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake, purposes, right? For my sake, will find it. So, this week, homework. What doors are you holding shut that feel too risky to leave open? And what might give you the courage and the ability to deal with what is on the other side?
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.